Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye, sort of a nostril, two teeth. One of the teeth has a small cavity. Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
All right, welcome everybody. Thank you for joining us for another Anatomy of a Movie. This week on the chopping block, Avengers Age of Ultron. I'm John Comerford, joined in the studio by Sarah Stretton.
Hello.
Spoiler alert, we're talking.
That's right, we are talking. Phil, by the way, say hi, Phil, so everybody knows your voice.
Hello, everybody.
All right, but full disclaimer here. Because we're dissecting the movie, we're not going to get too far into the Marvel comic universe. We're going to leave that to our sister network, which is Marvel.
Not sister network. We have a show. We have a whole division here at the Popcorn Talk Network dedicated to Marvel movie news.
That's right. We're going to let them handle all that stuff because they're far more in depth at it than we will be. We're just going to talk the movie. Otherwise, we'll go into craziness.
We could spend probably, they can spend an hour on Easter eggs.
Yes,
so
exactly.
We are not going to be doing that today. We're going to be more talking about the movie.
That's right. So speaking of, let's get our overall reactions. Sarah, please.
Okay, I will start. I was very excited for the Avengers movies for like the months and months and months leading up to it with all the marketing.
And so much so she saw it in London.
I did see it
in
London.
She went all the way to London.
Which is also a whole other experience, guys. It's a whole other experience seeing this scale of movie in another country.
Well, I really want to know about that.
Yeah, because I love seeing movies in different countries because audiences react very differently.
Right.
And you kind of see what certain people think is funny versus what you find here. Mm-hmm. My first impression, though, is I walked into the theater in London, and I was, like, very specific about which theater I wanted to see this movie in, because I was like, okay, I want to make sure I'm seeing it in, like, the equivalent of, like, a Cinemark or, like, a big screen. And I walk in, and I was like, this screen is the size of an independent movie theater.
Really?
It was so tiny. And it was in a huge, nice theater, and I was paying, like, £16 a ticket, which is, like, a $20 ticket. Crazy, not even 3D. And then on top of that, their seats are like, you know how we have our seats on the, our aisles on the end?
Sure.
Their aisles straight down the middle.
Yeah.
And I was like, can I just sit in the aisle? It's the best view.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I had a little bit of a problem with that.
Was it a 200 seater? Do you have any idea?
Tiny. Yeah.
So less than that?
It was
like
probably, 100
seat theater?
No, it was probably like 200.
Wow.
Probably 200. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, no, we need to get these some bigger theaters out here. They need to feel the power of this movie. That being said, I still liked it. I'm going to have to now see it again because I do not think I got to fully appreciate some of the visual effects and some of the sound that I think this movie has to offer. But I was pleasantly surprised. I saw this with my whole family. Everyone liked it, which I thought was a really, really good indication. I've been hearing some, like, people that aren't so hyped about this movie, but I have a lot of good things to say, so I'm really excited to talk about it.
Okay, Phil.
I have primarily good things. I will give them credit. They want to flesh out the villain a little bit more. I feel like we need to get to know him, and that's always, just in general, that tends to make a movie stronger, right? Mm-hmm. Even going back, look at Unforgiven. You know, it played ping pong with William Money and Little Bill Daggett.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, when you have a robot, so to speak, I mean, as artificial intelligence, however smart he may be, it lacks that humanity side of it, so he didn't go the full breath for me. You know, he had a singular idea of what he wanted to do, and anything beyond that just wasn't part of the plan. And so that's where, you know, for better or worse, it didn't quite get me as much, I give Joss Whedon a lot of credit. You are juggling so many characters, and you know, unlike most, I think he did a very good job of balancing that out. You know, to not only include you know, the main guys and a villain, but to also include a lot of main guys.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And plus new characters.
And new characters and new storylines.
I have to say, I thought the same thing as him was, how the hell do you juggle all these things and make them work and stuff? And I mean, it's an insurmountable task, the pressure of trying to follow up the first one, which was huge. So for that right there, I think it's successful because it stood on its own. And I know everybody's comparing it. Oh, it's not as good. It's better. It's not good. Which is, I don't know how you avoid that conversation, but it's kind of a silly conversation because they're two different movies. But for me, it suffers under the weight of trying to carry so much. Though.
I think that there's so much strength to me in how he created this movie, though, mm-hmm. because I have seen all the Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. I've seen them multiple times. And so there were the Easter eggs that I could attach to. And mm-hmm. to me, it did increase my knowledge of each of the characters, mm-hmm. especially that Josh Whedon created this character, or didn't create, but he used the Scarlet Witch in a really interesting way, in that he made her and her brother this force that
Quicksilver
who are against them because they're against the Avengers, which to me was a very interesting
Stark Industries really
which was but a very interesting perspective that we did get to see that not all of the world was behind mm-hmm. them, and then have them go through the change of eventually being part of the team, and then for her to have created the ability to create the fears mm-hmm. in each of them. Yeah. It was something that both unified and diversified them. They all were going through,
it was a great
we're
going
to deal with their fear. Exactly.
It was a great device for Whedon to pick so that we can see some get some insight into these characters, which we normally wouldn't get to see.
Exactly. And I thought, this is why it's really smart.
It's a very smart device.
So I really loved her incorporation. There were moments where I wasn't, as Phil said, on board with Ultron. Mm-hmm. He did start out very strong. I didn't understand what his limitations were and why he was so unbeatable as compared to like Vision once they made mm-hmm. him. So there was a couple weak points in that development for me. Also with Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I thought that his circle wasn't really completed. Like the theme they created around Hawkeye for me was kind of a letdown mm-hmm. because the whole movie they're building up to, and they're showing us that he is valuable.
Right.
They're showing us that he has a family that cares. Mm-hmm. And I like Hawkeye. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting to see the perspective of it. Well, is he good enough to be an Avenger? Mm-hmm. Why is he part of this team? And I really expected by the end for the other Avengers to realize it as much as I as an audience member was. And I didn't feel like they did. And the fact that Quicksilver was the one that saved him, which, yes, I was surprised about. And their little joke there got me. But I was like, oh, but you didn't show me that the other Avengers know how important Hawkeye is.
I would agree with that, too. And also, his wife's telling him to make sure they're a team and stuff. And even that was, which is, they kind of paid it off with what his speech to Scarlet, which mm-hmm. I thought was, you know, it was a fun speech. Like, none of this makes any sense. I go, you're right, it doesn't. You being in the Avengers makes no sense, but we'll go with it. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you that it wasn't full, because I wanted the same thing. I wanted them to explain to me why it was so important that Hawkeye figure out or make sure that they're a team, they have your back. And I didn't think that was there because the person who had his back was Quicksilver, not really the Avengers to begin with.
Exactly.
So it was kind of a weird,
and it was interesting on Quicksilver's arc. That was an interesting point because that was his he has been so defensive over his sister and that alone, and that being his family, and it's finally him accepting that his family is greater than just his sister, and that sacrifice and that switch of loyalty and from being so angry to being able to sacrifice himself, pretty, I think he knew. I think he went in that not really.
Yeah, he didn't think he'd come out. You think he was aware that he wouldn't make it.
Yes. Okay. And so I thought that was a nice arc for him. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think that it kind of made Hawkeye's arc circle go down.
Diluted a little bit. Yeah. The other thing about the Quicksilver and Scarlet, which they were so hell-bent on getting retribution to Stark, and then it, you know, was so easily dropped. Now, I get it, they're going up against Ultron and he's going to kill everybody, but there didn't seem to be any vestige of it afterwards.
We didn't get any conversation between the two of them.
Well, I know,
That part of it.
I wanted to keep the conflict going. Anyway.
I didn't necessarily mind that part of it. I mean, going back to kind of an earlier point, with the amount of characters. Yeah, the problem is you can approach this any different way, and I know a lot of people, to my understanding, Agent Carter really developed the Natasha storyline, and people thought they would see more of her and kind of that develop in this movie, and so it just, you know, you could say that its successes are its weaknesses, but then again, its weaknesses are its successes. And so, you know, you kind of, I think you just got to get your own enjoyment out of it however you can, because that's the whole Marvel universe. You can come into it any which way, and whatever experience you have, that is what you get, and you just got to be happy with it. I think it was good.
On that point, though, some people aren't happy. Mm-hmm. And I've heard some of the reviews, but no one's really got... I've had one person get into their exact reasoning, and that was that they said that, to them, Ultron wasn't scary enough. He came in very dark and scary, and then for them, he kind of weakened as we saw him progress.
Yeah, I can see that argument.
But have you guys heard anything else specific as to why people aren't liking it?
But the specifics I get go way into the whole zeitgeist and the folklore and everything, and I was like, okay, that's beyond my
So is it more of like looking at loopholes or looking at changes?
Well,
or?
I think a couple things. I think a lot of the is, okay, well, you set up this whole Avengers one, and this one didn't reach that, the first one. They compared it to the first one, and they said it didn't reach that because the first one, and I don't know how it could, because the first one's new and interesting.
Well, you have Loki in the first one, too, and I'm just talking about the fact that it's a fan favorite.
Yeah. But I think Ultron's a part of it because Ultron, in terms of the comic series, was a huge villain and was a whole series. And here they kind of got rid of him in one movie, and it wasn't really it didn't do justice to the Ultron that was created in the comics. So that's one huge problem for a lot of people, is because it was so, it didn't look easy on screen, but in terms of what they're aware of Ultron's capable of his capabilities, it was too easy. And I agree with the whole argument that Ultron, you know, because they talked about him like he couldn't be destroyed. He would beat any one of us. We didn't even know if we could beat him together. And then it was kind of, he was dispatched without, I mean, I didn't even ever see him go up against the two big guys, Hulk or Thor. Neither one of them really kind of went at him.
See, and that,
A lot of people are upset about that because none of those heavy hitters didn't have a chance or a go at.
I just think if you were going to spend more time anywhere with this movie, and maybe they have it, the building of Ultron, right? Yes, it was an accident. And that's the whole point, is that, you know, they were doing something, creating something, and, you know, through this, it got miscalculated. Mm-hmm. And this is what came out of it, but I wanted to kind of see that a little bit more, just for my own kind of amusement, to know what was the idea, and how did it fully get wrong?
Yeah,
you know,
and that's where I think where it struggled under the weight of having to carry so much. You didn't really get a lot of in-depth stuff on anything.
I don't know. I feel like I could argue that because for me, the creation of Ultron, I'm not going to talk yet about what Ultron became, but how they created him and how it was Tony Stark and Banner. Mm-hmm. There were the people who created something that would destroy themselves, I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. That this was now a villain that we were not getting coming from another planet, coming from with its own agenda, with its own plan, that it was something that humans sometimes create problems for themselves, and that and then they have to overcome. And then we got the personal struggle of whether to try again, which was with them coming up with Vision. But that debate over, no, we've already gone so far as to create a killing AI, like that they then had to struggle with the, he wants to keep going. He wants to try again because they're still close to creating something that's needed. I really liked that whole story. I liked that it was a villain coming from within this group of people, that there was conflict amongst them about whether or not they should be doing it, that they aren't always on the same page as a team intellectually, or what they want or what they're trying to do.
Well, that's kind of one of the things that people are disliking about it, because it's very similar to the first story, which is he rips the team apart and then has to build them back together again, which is exactly what happened. So you're asking, why are people not happy with it? That's one of the reasons.
And I think, too, you know, I mean, if he, again, its strengths are its weaknesses, its weaknesses are its strengths. You could spend a whole movie on Tony Stark's psychology in terms
of... You do.
Of,
they're called Iron Man.
I mean, yes. Yes, they are. So there you go.
This is what team movies are about. If we saw a movie that had been created where all of them were like, this is a great idea for every single thing, that's not human. That's not how minds work. Like, the whole reason that they put kind of Captain America in charge was that he was supposed to unite all of these people who came from very different perspectives. The fact that he's maybe failing at his job, especially with Tony, should be probably a little bit more addressed, because he is supposed to be the leader and he has these teammates who are continuing to step out of line. I agree that there, but this is a team that is still new, and we haven't seen them do like that much. And the first one to me was just like getting it so all of that, all of their powers, all the things they could do could work together. Mm-hmm. And it was the like, you know, when they learned that like the Hulk or that Tony or they could punch things together and create shock waves. Like that was more about what that movie was about. It was creating these epic fights of them being able
which
to combine.
Which you saw in the first fight sequence anyway. That you saw them really working as a team at their best.
They're great at that. Yeah, they were great at all the physical fighting together, fighting as a unit. Mm-hmm. But mind-wise, what they want, what their thoughts, that was what this movie was about. Mm-hmm. Trying to get more in line on those components of them. It was more about the psyche, and I really enjoyed that because I didn't need to see what happened with. If you look at the Transformers franchise, I think a lot of that is like, okay, so this time we dealt with one country. Now the next movie we have to deal with like five countries. And then we're going to build bigger. And it's just like, okay, now all we're talking about is topping up battles. And it's great if in films you can add new visual effects or something interesting in the fighting style. But you need to also be added more character-wise. And I thought that this movie did a good job of that.
Well, speaking to that was even what Joss Whedon said. He didn't. He wanted the sequel to be smaller, more painful. What was the word? Yeah, smaller, more personal, more painful. He didn't want it to be large in scope. It just kind of got large in scope because of so many characters. And he said he looked at Empire Strikes Back and The Godfather 2 as part of his inspiration because those are dark.
Is that why so many hands were cut off?
Yeah, maybe. I didn't ask that. But I thought that was interesting that you point that out because that's what he was hoping for. Mm-hmm. But it just, the production is, it just got bigger and bigger. And I think,
I like the technique, you know, to Sarah's point of, you know, every time we entered into their mind, you know, and there was obviously the repercussions then after the first kind of vision and using that superpower. Now it became, you know, now they kind of saw it in within themselves and they didn't need anybody to push them in that direction. And that's what they were tormented by.
Yeah.
So, you know, visually I thought it did work.
Mm-hmm. It's just for me, it's like, for the most part, I feel like I learned something new about each of the characters. And that's impressive because we've had so many movies. So the fact that you can introduce me to a new component of their personality or a little bit more information, I think is a really strong step for the movies. The only one I didn't really learn a lot about was Banner Hulk, like because we never got to see his fear, but everyone kind of knows what his fear is. He's been very vocal about it for a long time. Well, we've seen him go into hiding.
Yeah, but what was apparent in this one that wasn't apparent in the other was because Banner always fears what the Hulk will do, but I never got the sense, except in this one, I kind of feared that I realized that the Hulk's kind of afraid of what Banner might do. They're kind of afraid of each other in a sense.
He's very fearful.
Yeah.
Just in general, as a character, his level of acceptance with himself, with his personality, has never got there. Mm-hmm. But that window was opened a little bit more with Natasha's character and their love story, which I didn't know that was the direction they were going to go with this movie. I'm going to have to rewatch and see if it was hinted in the past because to me it kind of came.
Well,
it
in
was
the first
surprising.
One, the way that she goes, they send her to get him. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, there's stuff there that's nuanced, but it's not very overt.
Yeah, but she also flirts very heavily with, like, Stark, and, true. You know, so I didn't...
Well, Captain America, I mean, that was the joke.
Yeah.
Says, when Bruce says, wait, what do you mean by you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, but it didn't... I haven't seen it enough in the past for it to have been clear to me that that was where they were going in this movie. That being said, I thought that the reasons why they would have feelings for each other, or specifically why she would have feelings for him, I thought were really strong. And I liked them. I liked that they put it into Natasha's character that she was looking for the person who didn't want to be a fighter because that was something she internally struggled with what she was. So I thought it was a nice little love story they added, especially because Pepper's not in it and the other women have been just included, which they obviously made a very obvious joke to. That conversation was a little hard to get through.
Oh, that one, yes, okay.
Wait, which woman is better?
Talking at the party.
Yeah, and they're like, well, they're both not here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we've all noticed. let's say the lines a couple more times.
Yeah, but I thought that was a fun exchange. Yeah, my girl, Thor in it. Yeah. But my girl's better. I mean, that's an argument between two guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It didn't work for you?
I felt like it was a little like, oh, we have to address for the audience mm-hmm. that these two actresses aren't in this film. Mm-hmm. So let's make a conversation about it. It was a little much for me mm-hmm. versus I thought a conversation that was much handled in a kind of better way was the visual conversation of lifting Thor's hammer.
Oh, yeah.
That we got. Yeah. I thought that scene was orchestrated and done so well. Just being that, and this is getting into a little Marvel University stuff, but I thought that on the level of this was them getting along as friends, this is them with yeah. their guard down, this is how this team works.
They're in their civvies.
Yeah, exactly. This is them just being funny together yeah. and not worrying about danger. I thought that that played off really well. On top of the fact of this, everyone having the ego, they need to kind of match Thor. The fact that, they had Captain America be able to nudge it.
Yeah.
Which is an Easter egg because yeah. supposedly he, in some cases, has had the ability to be yeah. able to lift it. Mm-hmm. And that the fact that Natasha refuses.
And the look on Thor's face, by the way, when, yeah. when Captain America nudges it was great.
The worry that Natasha doesn't try because there's yeah. also another thing, she's been able to lift it. So how they played that mm-hmm. whole scene to me showed really well because it was Easter eggs for people who knew.
Yeah.
It was a good unifying experience where mm-hmm. I got to kind of feel like they were people mm-hmm. and not just...
because yeah, they weren't dressed in uniform.
Yeah, not just superheroes. And it was a great setup for the other scene. And it was just funny. And exactly. And it was a good play into what was going on
yeah.
while you have this semi-ego, semi... who can lift this hammer? And meanwhile, we all know that Ultron is forming. Mm-hmm. Like, I just thought that scene was done so well. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my favorites.
That was a fun scene. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But did you guys felt like he carried off, Joss Whedon carried off all the storylines fine? Because I honestly think if you pulled one or two of those away, you would have had a better movie. I still like the movie. Don't get me wrong.
But then that would become a criticism for other people.
I think that...
But you were here, and I'm asking your criticism of that. So.
I think that...
Honestly, I think for what it was, I will give this guy credit. You know, I didn't really have a problem with it too much. Mm-hmm. Yes, there were scenes, like, for me, I didn't, you know, the whole kind of getting the Hulk back to being Bruce, that whole sequence... I didn't need it necessarily, but at the same time, it was fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So I could nitpick in that regard all day, but no, it was good.
I think that what it needed to do for me was have beautiful action sequences, a little bit more character development, mm-hmm. and at one point, I had to fear that they weren't going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I think that that's what walking into another Avengers movie, that's what I need. For the action sequences, so many that I liked. I thought that the raising of
Sokovia
into the meteor, I thought that was really interesting, mm-hmm. Especially because it kind of brought us back there, mm-hmm. which I thought was a little bit small worldly, but mm-hmm. okay.
He wanted to keep it small.
The beginning sequence where they are on a successful mission, mm-hmm. Where they're going through the forest and you get that really long shot, like mm-hmm. towards the beginning. I thought there was a lot of action that I really, really liked, visually, and it was compelling and energetic and high stakes. Mm-hmm. So that was good. As I said, I learned something about the character. Where I was fearful of them failing, that's the part that I guess struggles for me in this movie, because I really was only nervous for them mm-hmm. at one point. For me, it came about, I don't know, maybe halfway through uh-huh. when it's Ultron has gone to Dr. Cho and he's put her under his mind control.
Mm-hmm.
And she's created this body for him. Mm-hmm. And then it's really getting into that where you're seeing it loading. You're mm-hmm. seeing his the transference of his AI mm-hmm. to this body loading.
Ultron's into
mm-hmm. And I was just like scared that he was going to get that because they had made Ultron big, and then to me they had made this new body for mm-hmm. him bigger. What I was comprehending from this movie was that if this transference of data or mind, AI was completed, then there was no turning back. Mm-hmm. That if it got to that point, then we were all doomed. There was absolutely no hope. There would be no end to him, and he was going to be just completely uncontrollable.
Right. But story-wise, you would have, like, that's just where you have to go regardless.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the whole point, you get to the point where, like, there's insurmountable odds.
See, but to me, that was the scariest moment in the whole movie, and that was halfway through.
He was taken away because he didn't complete
it. He didn't complete it, and then they did create Vision through that. So to me, hands down, Vision should have been able to destroy Ultron. Because he was a step above.
The next evolution.
Yes. I think, so then I was never scared for the rest of the thing, because I was like, well, you almost could have defeated him on your own as a team, and now you've got another player to help you. And then on top of that, you just got Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver on now on board. So your team has gone up by three great people. Mm-hmm. His team has gone down by two people.
Yeah, but he has
in
all
the
those drone.
I get that, and to me, the biggest question was then, oh, well, how do you eliminate him from the internet? Mm-hmm. And then once that got done in, like, 5 seconds, I was kind of like, okay, so they're going to win. So how long is it going to take?
Yeah, it's just a numbers game at that point.
Yeah, and then it's just, like, how many people are going to survive?
I think for me, Ultron, you know, I felt a little cheated. This is my criticism. I felt a little cheated by his motives, because everyone knows what his motives are going to be. And to hide that for such a large portion of the movie, just make it known. You know? And if you're this being, Ultron, you know, and you can control many things, just say it. You know? And I get he was withholding it for the, you know, Quicksilver and the twins. But
well, he was doing that to keep them on his side.
I get it, but I think story-wise there could have been a better way to do it while communicating to the audience, like, this is what it is. Because the withholding of the MacGuffin, it wasn't a strong MacGuffin. The logical conclusion of, like, in order to save humanity, we must kill humanity, I'm just kind of tired of.
Yeah,
tired of
that, we have heard of that. That being said, I thought that while they did choose a thought process we've seen before, the scripted workings of everything Ultron said were, I thought, were really nice, because he got everything from the internet, what it'd be, and the use of the Pinocchio song I thought was really creepy.
It was.
The No Strings was really creepy.
That was great.
And I was on board with that. Also, just like how he talked, how they did play off of him pulling Stark's own words. I thought that was all done really well. Like how he wrote that, how he wrote what this character was saying, I thought was done really well, and I thought it was acted well.
And I think in that regard, though, I think you know, with the way it seemed they were playing it, Stark and him would have to have more of a one-off, and that they were one and the same.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting too. And to go along with that, I thought it was interesting that Stark's creation wants to kill him, and that Ultron's creation ends up killing him. They're just keeping that cycle going as well. What we create kills us.
Yeah, so don't create anything.
Yes, exactly.
But what we create also can save us.
I'm going to go back to Sarah's point about how there wasn't enough jeopardy, I would say, you didn't feel like they were in trouble. How much does this affect it for you? The fact that you know that none of these guys are going to get killed. Then there's no threat of them dying, so how can you be worried about them in the first place? I mean, how do you create that jeopardy if you know
foremost,
they can't get rid of those?
I think you have to be, you know, I look at this almost like a TV show, right? Because it spans so many different areas that you just have to be willing to kill off a character. I don't care who it is. I understand all of these actors in these roles are A-list actors. They're huge. But if you really want to shock the world and you really want to set a different precedent, you've got to be able to...
But you know they're not going to.
I also think that you have
That's what I'm asking. That's what I'm saying. But you know going in, they're not going to. No one's going to. Because Quicksilver dies and you go, yeah, you knew that if anybody had to die, it had to be him because he's an X-Man and there's all kinds of craziness about that. So it's like, he's the only one that's going to die.
I think that on top of that, though, maybe if you can't kill a main character or if that's your restriction because of studios or whatnot, I think you do need to put... I think they tried. To me, it didn't hit hard enough. I think you have to put a little bit more grief and weight into just the civilians you lose.
That's
in all these situations.
Well,
this was almost like
But to me, the one glimpse of it we got was through kind of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, which had now been transformed. So to me, that's still elevated. I thought that it just needed to be, I thought that you just need a little bit of someone who's affected, who has no power, mm-hmm. and who doesn't have the capability, who hasn't had the capability to come up with some super thing that's now allowed them to react. Like, there are so many people in this situation, and it's what Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch started as, who are just people who are being used as playthings for these superheroes and supervillains, and we're not seeing enough of how it's affecting their life. And, like, we see the scream, or we'll see, like, someone running in terror, but we're not dealing with people actually losing someone. Exactly. We're not seeing...
Well, and to their credit, I think that's what he was trying to do with Hawkeye's family. He's trying to show you the human toll that it might... Because they're setting you up to think that Hawkeye is going to get killed because his wife... He's got two kids, his wife's pregnant, and any other movie, he'd be the guy to death.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost... You know, a lot of people are saying that this is a reaction to Man of Steel, where Man of Steel, the last sequence, spoiler alert, they went through... Basically, all of Metropolis is destroyed. And he's trying to save...
Humanity, but he ends up
basically hurting tons and tons of people.
With no seeming effect on anything.
Yeah, you can't kill one person to save many, and then finally he realizes, okay, I gotta snap this guy's neck off. That's the only way to do it. And so that last sequence, I get it, we didn't go into depth with anyone in particular, but I mean, they made a huge emphasis of no one person dies.
I agree with that, and I think that's the best way they could address it, because, again, by carrying so much, the only way, the more effective way to do that is to get to know one of those Sokovians personally, excuse me, and they couldn't take the time to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have to do it through the history. That's where you get...
To be fair, no one cares about Sokovians.
That's true.
Who's ever heard of a Sokovian before?
That's why you
before?
Get Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch's backstories. You can see, they were children, and then the child that he protects.
Someone.
So they're trying to do it, but again...
It's just not hitting strong enough.
Yeah, it's hard to get there if you can't spend time enough where we get to know somebody so that there's some sort of human toll.
Yeah, and it's because you have 11 main characters and all of them.
Exactly, that's all I'm saying. It's a wonderful movie. I'm just saying, had you been able to strip some of that away, you could have spent more time. Like, you could have had a little bit more character development. You could have gone darker. You could have done all kinds of things.
Yeah, there was a slight opportunity there, because initially when they first kind of come in, whatever the little robot, they come in and like, we're here to help, please kind of go and blah blah. And so now flip it to the end of the movie, and it's you got these drones and everything going around, and you're like, what?
Well,
last time they were here to help,
exactly,
what is going on now?
I don't know. I'm like trying to think of a way that they could have fixed it, because it's not
I don't know.
It's really hard to accomplish.
That's what I'm going. I don't know how the hell he did that from the get go. What I said at the top of the podcast, I don't know how the hell he did it, because he addressed just about everything you can address and still make a movie out of it. Because otherwise, in the hands of somebody else, it would have been a mess.
True.
And that's the thing. You have to trust and figure out a way. You know, it's like a basketball team. Not everyone's going to play, the full game. But
you got your role player.
Yeah, and you know what? You got to accept, like, despite how large, on my basketball team, I would want the top 10 basketball players in the entire world. But that also means not every top 10 basketball player is going to play. You know, there's going to be minutes. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to figure out how to divide that. And I thought he was strong enough to stand by what he did.
No, I certainly appreciate that. I'm trying to think of, like,
because there's too many people who would react.
I think you have to have a human component that you get close to that you lose, or that you see someone you care about lose. And on top of that, in that they had to focus so much on these different characters, losing characters maybe like Pepper, like Jane, not being able to see them except for other human components, just as cameos, we're not feeling the weight of any of those people.
Yeah.
And to me, Hawkeye's family, although I did like them, and I did like that they hid his whole life, I liked all those ideas behind it, they felt very isolated to me. Mm-hmm. They felt like they weren't really part of
the world. Yeah,
they
were
like very much just his family. I was kind of
because
curious as to what else they're doing.
They didn't interact beyond that. Yeah, they said, they met each other. But it was her, it was the wife and him kind of talking the whole time. Mm-hmm. And we were getting the perspective of everybody else and kind of where they were at mentally in those moments. But had like Captain America and her talked more or Tony Stark, whoever the case may be, I think that would have made it a little bit stronger.
Agreed.
Just a thought.
Who knows? But theme-wise and action-wise, did you guys have a favorite like action scene? We had some big ones. We had.
I liked when the airplane, the oversized like cargo airplane came up.
Aircraft carrier, whatever the hell it is.
I mean, that whole ending sequence was huge. But like, if I'm gonna pick a portion, that to me was great. You know, and when they finally made the stance, you know, around they circled everything. They said, "Come at us!" You know, and everyone kind of did their part. I thought that was really cool. Albeit it lasted a fairly short amount of time.
I have to say, I liked the Hulk and Iron Man going at it. I thought that was a lot of fun. I thought that was a setup for how he's going to go up against Ultron, because apparently Ultron was better than Iron Man. So I'm going, "Oh, geez, this is going to be good." But that, we never got to see that.
But that didn't happen.
No, never.
You can't pick a favorite that's not existent.
No, he picked Hulk versus Iron Man.
What's that?
He picked Hulk versus Iron Man. Yeah, that's what he picked. That happened.
So
interesting. I haven't decided my favorite yet.
Well, I have to say, I was surprised at how well Captain America did against Ultron. You know, I didn't expect him to hold his own. You know, I figured, you know, somebody, a lot of people have said that that's only a setup so that they can have the movie next year with Civil War between Iron Man and Captain America.
Yeah, that'll be whole interesting. All of these setups solved.
Yeah, I know. It's like, and some of that I'm going, God, he has to carry so much of that too in this movie. Can't he just make a damn movie? But a lot of it are going.
But to a lot of people, it did. Like, you look at, I said before that I saw this with my family, and all of them were on board, liked the characters, understood it, didn't come out asking me a ton of questions. My mom told me...
Which sounds like they normally do.
Yes. 100%.
Check out our Under the Skin podcast.
Yeah.
I can see that one. No, but like... literally mom be like, "Well, who was this person? Well, how do they know each other?" Well, like, they didn't have any questions.
That's nice.
My mom told me it's her favorite Avengers movie. Whoa. of all of them.
Favorite Marvel movie of all of them, or is it favorite?
I don't think she knows the difference. Sure it's just actually sure my mom, that was all the super movie here, like movies she's seen, because I'm sure in her mind they're all the same. But she did. Like, they did feel like it was, and that I think came from the focus on character in this, that did make people who aren't either, I guess, super fans or kind of just frequent these movies as if it fits into their schedule, it worked for them. And they were happy. So I was like, it was a good family movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of it is, you know, in terms of criticisms, this isn't a big one, but because it's so massive and things like that, people want sort of like a through line of whether score, visual, you know what I mean? And when you're doing this amount of production, right, between TV shows and movies, it's hard to do that. And so they've had many different composers and things like that. And so in terms of they kind of evolve and things like that, and you can kind of stick to certain aspects of it. But when it's not the same person really driving that force, it becomes difficult. And I've heard that is a slight, I don't know if it's necessarily a criticism, but, you know, it could just be this thing in people's minds that they want it or need it.
I hadn't heard that.
I felt like they tried for three through lines in this movie. First one was focused on fear and how these characters were dealing with their fear. Right. Second was obviously the villain Ultron, his development, what he did. And then I felt like the third one, that to keep the cohesiveness of this film, was the tone of humor that they embraced in this installment, which was, it was very specific and that it was just like kind of quippy remarks that made fun of themselves, that made fun of the other characters. And I felt that they did try and add that for almost every character in almost every scene. We got to see people kind of, I feel like even Ultron, even Vision, who said, "I am," they all had these moments of being funny. So that to me was just a through line that he used. To keep us like remembering, not only breaking tension, not only
to be fun. Man. Yeah, they're not just all. They're dumb,
I mean, what did you guys think of the humor? There was a lot of humor starting with the opening. Like, watch the language.
Yeah. And they carried that runner through. And one of my favorite was Hawkeye when he wants to kill Quicksilver. No one would know. And he has his own little story going on about how he could just kill the guy.
Yeah, no one. But what weight? Here's the thing. What weight does that carry? Because, I mean, that he ends up, Quicksilver ends up saving him, and it's like, oh, you. Because in some ways, I look at Hawkeye like, you asshole.
Well, I don't look at him that way because in the moment, he's just kidding. And secondly, it's just entertaining and it's fun for the audience. For me, I don't think it carries weight where, like, when he actually gets killed, I go, what an asshole. You made fun of him earlier, Hawkeye.
I did.
Yeah, but I don't. I say that sarcastically to people all the time. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't
he
mean
says like that I'm, about you every day. You don't, like, hear this?
It's not like you're really, not like he really wants to kill the guy, but he's just saying, yeah, I could do it. No one would know, you know, and.
Exactly. Or there's just, like, points where a lot of it does come from Tony Stark's character.
Yeah, well, he's like, the most... Tony Snark is what he should be called, but anyway.
I'm just the guy who pays for everything, comes up with everything, does everything. But yeah, no, don't worry. I'm not in charge.
Yeah.
But it does. It continuously happens, and
if he's in charge, he makes stupid decisions all the time because of his hubris. I mean, it's because of his hubris.
What did you guys think? Okay, so when he's talking with when he's talking with Samuel L. Jackson's character, you know, and that kind of gets revealed, and we have some semblance of S.H.I.E.L.D. back together in this. What did you guys think of that conversation? Because that really should have been, and maybe it was for some people, maybe it wasn't for others, a turning point in terms of how Tony Stark was going to act moving forward.
Well, I thought it needed to happen because this whole idea, there was never an awareness until that scene where he was at all taking responsibility for creating this, because he kept believing in it. He kept drinking his own juice that, you know, we can do it. We can save it. We can save the world so we can all go home. And never did he go, yeah, okay, that guy screwed up.
Yeah.
Until that scene. When he saw what had happened, and then he finally, Fury's reminding of it, and the only thing that made it worse for him is that he was the only one that didn't die.
Fury kind of fell flat for me in this
movie. Yeah, didn't work for him.
But what is he supposed to bring?
I don't know. I don't know if I can even explain it. Mm-hmm. Where, because there was so much in this movie, mm-hmm. I kind of felt like they gave him a little too much time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was all I needed. It was him to show up with the aircraft, mm-hmm. with the carrier or whatnot. But there was a couple moments where I was like, there are other stories I'd rather be focusing on.
I have to say, I like that they brought him back just to, hey, to remind the team, look, you got to be a team. There's only one way to win this thing. Now, whether or not he was too long in that, for me, I was fine with it. I don't think they took too long for me.
Did it take away from Captain America? Because, I mean, by having Fury there, like, he becomes the de facto leader.
And it's not Captain America who pulls them together.
Well, but that's what his role has been from the get-go, which is always get the team together and let them. And he's always said, okay, Captain, go figure it out. That's what
he does. But Captain didn't figure it out.
I know. He didn't in this one. But I'm just saying he's always the one that brings gets the pieces together. And he even says that to what's her name? You hope. He says it to Black Widow. He says, you hope, you don't see the future, but you hope, and then you just hope the best, or whatever it is. I can't remember the specific line, sorry. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was missing for me in terms of Captain America's arc was that thing was pulling together. But he is, the end there, he's the one that rallies and gets everybody to save all the people. So that was his moment.
And what was them recognizing Hawkeye?
What's that? No, that didn't happen.
Okay. Just checking. No, I missed that one.
No, I already said that. I already agreed with you on that. Okay. I already told you that. The only thing that I said that was an attempt to finish that storyline was the speech he gave to Scarlet Witch.
It was interesting, though, because all the acknowledgments towards Hawkeye were from Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Exactly.
Both of which are not involved with the conversation he had with his wife. Yeah. But... okay.
Because all I really wanted was at one point to have something, Hawkeye at some point do something. I mean, he does in the opening sequence, he shoots the thing into the bunker or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the hell he does, but he does something there. But at the end there, I wanted him to do something to save someone and go, oh yeah, thanks Hawkeye. So I wanted like Thor or somebody to say something.
Anything.
Yeah, just
right.
To say, oh yeah, that's right, he's on the team. He's not an afterthought.
Another moment, though, that I really liked just talking about teammates and things coming a little bit more full circle was I did think that the end play of Natasha and Banner's storyline,
right. Mm-hmm.
Of how they constantly were this, should we run away, should we run away, and her kiss of him and then pushing him off so he turns green. I thought that was a really good moment. Mm-hmm. How that played out into the battle, I thought was done really well, especially because they to me, it added to their relationship because it, through this movie, I think it established that not only could they get along kind of mentally, but they were a good team in battle as well. Whether it be like when she needed him and she was like, had a piggyback ride, so like she gets to the point. Like, I just did feel like they were becoming a good team on multiple fronts in this movie. So I thought.
And I thought it was perfect that he takes off.
That made me sad.
Of course, but that's you know, they can't be together. They can't.
Why not?
For the same reason that Banner says.
I don't see that.
There's no future for them.
Guess there is. How is there no future for them?
They'll see each other next movie.
So you're assuming that every time it turns into the Hulk, she'll be able to calm him down.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was part of the... I really like that. Like, you know, it's one of those things that come back to me.
Do not ruin their relationship for me, please. She can calm him down.
Of course.
And
of
she
course.
Is...
Beauty and the Beast, always, yes, yes. Because every woman wants to change the man. And it's always successful.
Well, you know, he's a good guy.
She's also a very skilled fighter. I'm sure absolutely. She could run away.
Yeah. Really quickly. She did in the first movie. Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not going to say she can fight him because people get mad if I said that.
She's very skilled, though.
Mm-hmm. Ah! All right, so she's going to get Thor's hammer, and then she can fight him.
There you go. Okay.
See, this relationship could work.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Thor's hammer, right? We touched upon it, but we didn't go into it. Jarvis now is able to wield the hammer.
The Vision is, not Jarvis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
it's not. It's got part of Jarvis's, you know,
Jarvis was part of the AI, but then you have to put in the Mind Stone.
Yeah.
And this... And this body and all of this becomes stuff. Vision. Mm-hmm. Also, which I'm going to refer to as I Am.
Because that's how he refers to himself.
Which is a reference to God, in case you didn't get that.
So what about the Vision.
But is did I'm going to call him Jarvis for me.
You can call him Jarvis. I'll call him I Am. And you can call him Vision.
I'll call him Paul Bettany. Anyway.
The Holy Trinity. I don't mind setting kind of things up, but it almost, you know, we touched upon of like, ah, geez, these things keep popping up. Mm-hmm. You know, it can't be any coincidence. So,
the Infinity Stones?
Yes.
That's how you're going to put all these movies together.
Yeah, exactly. And he's going to, he puts the gauntlet on and he's going to do his own work. And
how he gets the thing out of the head.
I don't know. That'll be interesting.
I get that. The Vision. In the final battle, I didn't know what he was supposed to do.
Well, I think that's what was very interesting. To me, he was the most interesting character, mostly because I don't know hardly anything about him. And I liked a couple things. I loved the line about him, I was just born yesterday, all that kind of stuff. And I think that's why we don't know much about him. He doesn't even know what he's capable of, as I'm guessing, to some degree, because he's still figuring it out. And the fact that he was even saying, I don't want to kill anybody. I love that. The most jeopardy they were in, I thought when he came along, because I'm going, they don't know what he's capable of.
He's just going to be like, I'm good. I've got to go learn about myself.
And he sounds very,
goodbye.
And I thought he looked cool. I thought the whole thing was great. And I'm going, I don't know that this guy is going to turn around and just kill everybody. I just don't know. And that was the only time where I thought anybody was in jeopardy. I knew they weren't going to get killed, but I just didn't have... know what he would do, and I thought that was great, and I still thought I'm fascinated by that character, because what is he, what are his limits?
I have no idea what he thinks, the mind stone,
all that kind of stuff is like what, and what's his what he thinks, what are his ethics, I have no idea.
And do you think he's going to get closer to Thor? I mean, you know, in some ways you can look, because Thor's this guy who thinks of himself so highly.
Well, Thor is a god.
He's mighty, he's a demigod.
But in this scenario, like, it's almost like this is his brother. This is someone who's, you know,
he's creating the gods.
Okay. Sure.
You know, so that to me is going to be an interesting development.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but
why not? Well, we'll see, because apparently they're going to be training him with along with the others.
That's going to be interesting how we kind of left it. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of who's now the new team and not the old team, and how that's going
to
play.
Because, you know, again, I'm just going to go back to it just a little bit, because we know what Scarlet can do. We got to see a lot of that, so I thought that was fascinating. We could, you know, but we have no idea what this guy's capable of. We know that big bolt of whatever comes shooting out of his forehead. We know that. He can reach in and grab and rip it out. And it's like, what the hell is this guy?
That we don't know. And it will be fun to play with. It's just going to be hard for them to... I think we're just going to be seeing in these movies, though, them having to deal with creating so many characters. Yeah. And it's like, where is everyone else? Because that's even come up with when they do their spinoff movies.
Yeah. It's like, why don't you call your buddies?
Exactly. And this whole problem would be solved.
Yeah.
I think and those I know Dimitri, are the things we're going to have to
Dimitri's gone off about that. Yeah. Like when we did Captain America Winter Soldier, he had a 20-minute tirade about that. You only call in the Avengers when you really need them.
Yeah.
It sounds like you really need them. Yeah, the world's
exactly,
about to
exactly.
end.
That was my argument with him. He and I got at that.
But it is true, and that's just going to continue to be a bigger and bigger problem.
Right.
Because if our team now is of how many people?
I don't know. It's getting bigger and bigger, yeah. I was actually surprised that they brought in so many new characters for this thing. It's like,
I thought so, too. I thought that was...
But, you know, they set it up the next one nicely. I mean, they had to if they're going to... I mean, that's part of the gig is if you're going to write this one, you have to set up the next one.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Maybe we'll be seeing dual storylines. This team's over here doing this, while this team's over here doing
thing,
that.
Right? They used to kind of do that. Remember Clue, when it first came out? They had three different endings. Depending on which theater you went to, you saw a different version. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you just... You know, Avengers Age of Ultron version 1.
Yeah, okay.
Seen through the eyes of Black Widow.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more about other things.
Do you know how much money these things cost? They're not going to be able to make three.
Okay, they have... Okay, on Meet the Movie Press today, we talked about the extended version of Age of Ultron, right? Eddie, take a normal, like, hour and 30-minute movie.
Yeah.
The rough cut, if you kind of just assemble it, no matter what, how much trimming has been done, unless you're like Robert Rodriguez, perhaps, or whoever... This thing's going to be at least 2 hours and 45 minutes, typically three, right? So the rough cut of this was actually, in comparison to that ratio, relatively not bad. It was about 3 hours and something, you know, 3 hours and 30 minutes, let's say, which actually relatively isn't bad, as I said. But and there's enough stuff there that you get to play with.
Whittled it down to 2 hours and 21 minutes.
Yeah, so plus, you know, and that includes the credits and of course, the little snippets that we always get. But there's enough to play with there that... Yes, you can expand on, which is why people love extended cuts.
They love them. They love them.
Lord of the Rings made that very famous.
Well, let's talk about that. You can't put those in theaters.
Since we're talking about talk about this running time in this movie. Did you guys feel it was too long?
No.
It was a shorter running time than the original, the first one.
I didn't feel that it was long. I just find, to a degree, I mean, I'm learning more about the science of these various movies and action movies, and you do come out tired.
Yeah.
You do come out having eaten more popcorn and all this stuff. Like, there's a whole science to how you eat, how you...
And your adrenaline's bumping, and then at some point, your body's going, all right, chill, let's go, relax, we're crying.
And there's... Whenever I think back on it, like, it felt... The pace of this felt really good to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't feel like I was sitting there for a really long time. Like, I enjoyed this movie. But when I think about, like, what I want to talk about, there's a lot of stuff that I almost, like, don't need to mention. Like, we can... You know, it's like, but I don't think that the movie would survive without those scenes. Mm-hmm. Whether it be when
they
go
didn't stick
to
in your memory, it's like, okay, well, it's perfunctory.
For instance,
you have to have
talk about the scene where they go to the ship that's like in the shipyard, but it's on the ground the land called Wakanda. They pronounced it in two different ways in this movie, and now I can't figure out how to pronounce
it. Well, if you're not from Wakanda, you say Waganda. If you're from Wakanda, you say Wakanda.
Okay. Well, I don't believe you.
Zimbabwe,
you talk about that, Dean, and it is about getting the medal and being able to connect the dots and Tony Stark's background and weapons, and it's a Easter egg to another movie that, you know.
Captain America's in there.
There's a bunch of stuff, and it does come into play because that's when we do get the Scarlet Witch infects all of them with the fear, which is a huge vital scene. But I don't come out of it thinking about that scene as much. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And I feel like this movie has a few of those, but I felt like they were necessary because they added plot or action or whatnot. So not, in my opinion, it was cut very well. There are these scenes that I'm not really going to remember as part of this movie. Other things stick out more.
Yeah, I thought, again, just like the writing, I thought the editing was swiftly paced, and I never felt like it was dragging anywhere, and yet, you know, it was, I wasn't exhausted coming out of it, but I knew it was in fact, I honestly, I didn't
I knew
think
it was fast.
I didn't.
You what?
I didn't know it was 141. I knew it was over two, but that was about it. But I didn't feel it was 2:21.
I knew it was, the pacing was definitely fast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Fast. Between the camera always constantly moving, yeah, between how fast it was edited, yeah, you know, and
we just have a few moments of rest at between fight sequences.
And, you know, I'm part
we
of
go to the farm.
Breathe.
We had the after party. We, yeah.
I get, you know, I will give them credit. In terms of the action sequence, they were overall easy to follow. Like, obviously, yeah, we cut back and forth between the various people, but in terms of sticking with a person, I knew what was happening, mm-hmm, because, you know, you have these movies, even with a singular, like, superhero, and it's the fighting sequence, mm-hmm, it's just, you're like, what's, I'm going to tune out because, mm-hmm, I can't follow this. Mm-hmm. But they made that well.
Mm-hmm. So you never tuned out, is that what you're saying?
No. Okay. Again, they obviously cut, as I mentioned, they cut between, yeah, the different characters, but, mm-hmm, in the little snippets of each thing, I knew what was going on, partly because they almost didn't necessarily focus on the action, they focused on the comedy.
Yeah.
Which made it easier to follow.
The only thing that time where I thought they could have pared back was at the last sequence when they're saving trying to save humans. Yeah, and I felt they needed it, but it was like they kept cutting back too many times and too long on those things. They should have them and they should be there, but it was like I noticed the rhythm started to, yeah, go off in that area.
I also got a little lost in that fight scene just because I found myself having to think too much about
who's who, where
no,
are they?
The science of when the meteor was going to be, like, yeah, when they needed to heat it up, how were they going to heat it up? Like, where are they going to let it crash? Like, there was a lot of, like, I don't have time to think about that. Let's get back to the comedy because it wasn't quite making
too much
sense.
To think about.
Exactly. So you need to simplify that one more.
Why are you even thinking? Just, you know, at some point, Thor's going to use his hammer and that's it.
Like, and then just keep them from turning the key.
Yeah.
And also Tony Stark somehow be inside and, like, fix the core. Yeah, something.
Yeah.
But then the key does get turned, it's seemingly at the right exact point. But I didn't think they were ever planning on turning the key.
No, they weren't. That's why you needed Thor.
Who knows?
It all worked.
It worked out fine.
It did.
Okay, so that's enough for editing. We had talked a little bit about music. Did anything other than that? Because again, I
don't know.
I can tell, this was a noisy film.
This was
all I remember.
I don't remember themes. You know what I mean? Like, if we actually listened and did a whole science behind it, then maybe I could start to pick up on. Yeah. Oh, this is when Hulk, and this is. But you know what Christopher Nolan did with Batman, you know, you had the Joker and you had that or whatever. Like, I didn't know.
Well, Ultron had his own theme.
I don't remember it.
I got no strings.
Yeah. He wanted me to sing it. I wasn't going to sing it.
Well, you know, that's us bringing out of the Walt Disney vault, Pinocchio, and I'm sure we'll release that soon enough.
Yes, we will. The Ultron version.
The Ultron version of Pinocchio.
Yeah. Who's Geppetto?
The music in this, I'd have to rewatch it. It's one thing that I do think that I need to read this movie in. I sound like Dimitri. I miss him. I'm like, I need to see this movie in a little bit bigger of a theater.
Oh, really?
With, like, the full surround sound.
Yeah. Because a movie like this is an experience. Yeah. Apparently, people in London are being robbed.
Yeah. Well, and it
literally,
the specs are that it's done the best in IMAX theaters. It's broke the record. So
and it makes sense to me because I think that's such a huge part of how these movies are made. So and I would see it again. That's one thing that is also good about it is that I saw this movie less than a week ago, and I could see it again today, which I think to me is really important, especially for an action movie like this.
I mean, a lot of people have.
Oh yeah,
clearly.
The rewatchability is a good job, Avengers team.
Well, that's the one good thing about having so many storylines and trying to tell so much that if you see it again, you'll see things. You go, oh, I missed that the first time. You'll see them.
Exactly.
Did anyone see it in 3D?
I did not.
No.
Complete waste of 3D.
Really?
Here's the thing. There's nothing that adds to it.
Oh, Dimitri will hate that.
No, because, okay, it wasn't designed. It wasn't chopped for 3D.
No, but next ones are.
But, yeah.
That's wonderful. I could take off the glasses and see pretty much, you know how it gets a little bit fuzzy?
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I could see still the same thing, which to me tells me that it wasn't designed for, with The Hobbit and whatever, you see
Yeah.
You know, whatever you think of those movies in terms of the visual, it is 3D.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is just, okay, a pinky went out, came at me just a little bit.
Okay, it didn't, okay, it didn't do anything for you.
No, yeah. it's just a waste.
I know a lot of people who are not on the 3D boat. Like, it's...
I'm on the 3D boat. If the 3D, you know, and I didn't realize I bought a 3D ticket. It's not, I don't search for these things. I search for it based off of time. But there are movies like, you know, the Coraline is one of the greatest movies for me in 3D. Mm-hmm. You can't get a chance to see it in theaters now, but, and The Hobbit and obviously Avatar with that did. So there are movies that are amazing in 3D to just, you know, it's a superhero movie. It's a tentpole movie. Got to go see it in 3D. Jurassic World.
Yeah.
I think could be a great 3D movie.
Well,
with
even
the dinosaurs.
Hugo wasn't a. It was. It's not a superhero movie. It was shot in 3D. It looked beautiful in 3D.
Because it was. Yeah. It was. And that was. Yeah. That was his like world
I think
experimentation.
Part of it is the pacing. For me, 3D sometimes works better in movies that aren't as quickly cut.
Oh, really?
I think that for me, it's sometimes a little much, the 3D. I also sometimes get headaches a little bit in 3D. Uh-huh. So when everything's moving so quickly and you have such fast action-paced movies, sometimes when the 3D is too prominent, it's too much for me. Mm-hmm. So for instance, like in the last year that came out in 3D, I really liked Sin City, A Dame to Kill For in 3D. Because what was coming out was the graphics, or it was like an interesting, almost artistic detail versus... In a lot like this, it's too much.
I'll go deeper into it, right? It's not, you know...
Deeper into 3D, nice. I like
that. Totally. It's not necessarily even just the pacing. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that all those movies that you mentioned and the fact that why Hobbit, Avatar works, they're based on more computer-generated stuff. If you don't shoot it right, it's not going to look as good. And that's why with 3D, you have the era with computer-generated graphics. Obviously, you have the ability to mold
depth
of that.
So that's
and
why
whether
I think
Sin City or any of these other movies that she mentioned, it works for them.
That's why I think it was really successful in Hugo, because it was done as a strategic, artistic way to express his isolation, his loneliness, and all that kinds of stuff. As opposed to just being a very interesting way to create depth of field and all that other stuff. It was used primarily as a storytelling device and not just a visual device.
Yeah. So, there you have it. 3D versus 2D.
There you go.
Jury's out on that one.
Okay. But let's move on to acting. So, because, you know, a lot of times in these kinds of movies you go, what acting? There's just so much CG and all this stuff. But we had some character work and we had some fun stuff, right?
I think we had a lot of character work. Yeah. I think in acting realm there was a lot of people I was willing to feel for. I thought Scarlett Johansson did a wonderful job. I thought
you got to see so much of her backstory and how it affected
her. I really liked
she held
the backstory. And I did feel like she was falling for Banner. The comedy that kind of Hemsworth has been able to give Thor is very interesting to me because he is a very arrogant.
So difficult to get some humor out of that guy because
he is a god.
Yes.
Asgardian. He is Thor.
But they did. They managed to have some nice little moments.
This may be an unpopular idea/thing. Give me a chance. Give me a moment, right?
Oh, goodness.
And especially among two actors. But
way to set it up.
In these types of movies, first off, every actor, like, you know, they want to do their...
franchise movie.
They want to do their franchise movie, and then they want to do, like, their Oscar movie, right? And I get that. In these types of movies, people hate on them, you know. And I'll use Furious, you know, and Vin Diesel more of an example of this, and Paul Walker, for better or worse. I understand it's still a touchy subject, but I'm going to go there. What acting, right? You guys said it. Well, to me... This movie is not necessarily built upon the acting. It's built upon an it factor. And these actors that you're seeing, for better or worse, they may not necessarily be the greatest actors in the world, but they have just something that people love.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing on screen. Otherwise, this movie would not work. Robert Downey Jr., he's just great. Chris Evans, like, that's, you know what I mean? Are they acting to the furthest ability that any human being can act? Absolutely not. Can they do that in other movies? Maybe not. But what you're seeing on screen is just something magical.
Let me just say it this way. There's something to be said about putting somebody in that suit and making him a superhero, that helps to the it factor. I'm not saying Robert Downey Jr. doesn't bring that with him. I'm just saying it would be interesting to have somebody who wasn't his quality or his caliber.
But here's the thing. I've seen many people, in all facets of the business say, oh, like, if I'm put in a situation like that, I could do it. And I've seen people try to do certain things, mm-hmm. and they haven't. Luckily,
it's really hard to have this conversation without like ragging on people because,
well, I'm sorry. How many different people have
Spider-Man?
That's what I was going to talk about. And that's a lot because people don't believe
in
certain actors who have played it.
Yeah.
Or they'll side with they like them more as Peter Parker than as Spider-Man.
Supermans. I mean, different Batmans.
So is that an argument for Marvel?
My saying is there is an iconic thing that goes on with the Batsuit, so to speak. I mean, mm-hmm. You can say that, okay, well, yeah, but I didn't like Val Kilmer in it. Well, so, but there are many different people that were very successful and very good in the Batsuit. Part of it, the mystique, part of the fun is the suit itself. I'm just saying that adds to it. I mean, if it was just that one person is the only one that could play that role, then...
I'm not saying that one person is it. I'm saying... I mean, here's the thing. You could recast this entire Avengers thing and find people that... But they would have to still have that...
Sure.
That's something.
I think, though, that if you look at it, and let's look at specifically the Avengers, one was recast. You can talk about Hulk. Hulk was made before, and it was made with Edward Norton, who...
And along that, we also had, what's his name? Rich Banner. Eric Banner.
Yeah. But Norton is an actor's actor. People love him mm-hmm. for his acting ability. He is just so many great films from you're talking about Fight Club, you're talking about American History X, you're talking about how he's now in the Wes Anderson films. Mm-hmm. Like he is an actor who has done almost every genre mm-hmm. and done them all well. And when when the Hulk was recast, mm-hmm. people were mad. And I feel like it took a little while for people to kind of get on board.
But in many ways, though, Mark Ruffalo, had you had Ed Norton and Jeremy Renner, I feel like they would be slightly too similar in this type of, just even look-wise.
But I think that the reason that Ruffalo did win over the audience, uh-huh. I think now people have really accepted him, is mm-hmm. because his acting has lived up mm-hmm. to... the word that Norton did. I feel like he does show conflict really well. I think that everyone believes that he, as the Hulk, like, and as we're saying, like, struggles with becoming green. Like, that is all due to his acting. It's not just...
Here's the thing. I'm not saying they can't act or they're not actors. I'm just saying they have...
Yeah, I don't think anybody's disagreeing with that. I'm just saying that I'm agreeing with that. I'm also adding that part of the mystique and part of the fun and part of why they're accepted is because they're that character, meaning that's just why other people can come in and still take on the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying, is that there's a component there that isn't just about the actor and the it factor.
It also
people
helps.
Love to see Spider-Man.
It also helps
well,
that...
Well, apparently they don't, because it's just...
It also helps that you're surrounded
amazing
by a ton.
So amazing.
You're surrounded also by a ton of talented actors in this.
Great
writing combined with all of these people who are heightened superheroes, who have fan bases already, who are fan favorites because they have an it factor. Mm-hmm. You are adding a lot of things that are going to lead you towards good scenes mm-hmm. and believability, mm-hmm. and that is important because we're talking about a situation in film where you have to put in a lot of lenience.
Well, I will say this, right? Here's the unfortunate part of this movie that it goes up against. You write a script, right? And John, we've seen this before. Yeah. A script can be okay.
Sure.
Put the right actors to it and it elevates. And we've talked about it on here.
Put a great script in front of a bad actor, it can kill it.
It can.
Can destroy it.
But with Avengers and Age of Ultron, it, people's minds, this movie's already 100. Yeah. And now, just anything that, like, isn't part... You're just going down at this point. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing...
That's kind of what I was talking about at the thing. The fact that it has to live up to the other one is just ridiculous, because it's a totally different movie. I mean, you know, but you're the same character, same writer, director, so everybody's going to make that analogy. I mean, how can you not? But anyway, sorry. But
I just want to make sure, though, that we don't sound like we're being like, ah, this movie... And I don't think we are, but I just wanted to clarify. I'm not saying that... The Avengers is good because of only the cast and the writing. It is a special mix. It is something that it's like baking. You have to get everything right. Versus if you look at even just this year, movies that have come out with fantastic actors that are in kind of more fantasy type circumstances. You look at like Seventh Son that came out a couple months ago, which had huge actors in it. Like Julianne Moore is like the lead villain, and it's all about like witches, and it's based off of a book, and it should have pulled an audience, and it was just pummeled in the reviews. It was just told it was so bad, and that is something where you had good visuals. It just doesn't all add up. So like this movie did something right. It brought in really talented writers and editors and all this stuff.
More than anything, right? It made $686 million.
You can't just talk about the money as a means of it being right.
But let's talk about that metric for a second.
Okay, I'm sure the studio's looking at it like,
it is show business.
We didn't make our money on Avengers. Yeah. But great job with the work, everybody.
$280 million as their budget. It's already made $660 million worldwide.
That happens all the time. It's called Oscar
movies. Yeah.
Yeah, so, Avengers is an Oscar contender.
That's not what I'm saying.
I think it had as strong a weekend as its predecessor, if I'm not mistaken, or close to
it. It came in number two overall in history.
Right. So, and number one for a superhero film in a bunch of different countries, broke records in a bunch of different countries. So, people were waiting to see this. Not only did they see it, they went back to see it. I mean, I can't remember how many times I was reading about how people were going back for 3, 4, 5 He was like, how did they just kept going back? Okay.
So that's this is slightly unrelated, but it relates. And this is as deep as we're going to go into the universe. There's an article that a lot of, it's the upfronts, right?
Right.
And a lot of new shows, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got renewed.
Yep.
Agent Carter got renewed. And other shows are kind of being developed around this, but there's an argument by people like, why don't you just stick to the movies? The TV shows bring in no audience. Agent Carter, I think, comes in at a 1.5 overall in the 18 to 34 demo, which is low. Mm-hmm. And that's a high, not Agent Carter, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. And that's like one of the top things of this. But I look at it as these fans are so loyal that no matter the size of this audience, you know, in the TV world, It first off, it feeds into all this stuff.
Yeah, it's a revenue stream, and it's also feeding all other stories.
And second off, you know, these people, you know, it doesn't matter. You can have 20 million people, but if they're not willing to spend a single dime on anything versus, you know, whatever, 1 million, but they're willing to cut off their hand to do anything for you, I would say that's a stronger audience.
More cutting offs.
I thought I'd just
We're not talking about cutting off any more hands.
If you are a loyal fan, I want you to prove your loyalty.
Well, so that was so we were talking about metrics. That's how much money they reached in. I mean, the critical response is what do we got on?
The Rotten Tomatoes is
75% for critics. For audience, it's 89%, so it's much higher for an audience. Metacritic's got it at 66. Cinema Score's got it at an A. So those are just other metrics.
Metacritic has 66
out of 100. That's critics. But loaded. Audiences for Rotten Tomatoes are calling it, you know, it's at 89, but they're giving it a 6.7 out of 10, but it's 89 favorable. So that's where audiences are on. So they're far ahead of the critics. Critics not as happy with it. So
part of it too, I don't know, I get more and more excited every summer. I think this kicks off a great lineup of summer movies. Whether or not they live up to it, I don't know, but this is, you know, Furious 7 was great, and that kind of that was a nice little tease. And this, we can say officially, we're in the summer blockbuster.
Yeah, were you surprised at all that they released it now instead of...
They've always released it.
I'm just wondering, you know, because I guess now, right? But usually sometimes Memorial Day is when they are more likely
to. Not recently. Captain America.
Yeah, are they doing it now?
Well, here's the thing. They also have Ant-Man coming out. So yeah, they pushed that kind of in, you know, later in the summer. So they're balancing the two out. But Captain America, Winter Soldier came out in May as well. Mm-hmm. So it seems that May is like the magic, you know, top of May, not just like middle of the May, end of May. It's top of May. Mm-hmm. It seems to be
May movie month.
Yeah,
that's serious. Personal podcast, which you can tune into for May movie month.
Hey, it's May. We got a lot of movies. We got Pitch Perfect. Well, back. Pitches. We got
Age of Ultron. So they're going to do their sequels, Infinity War Part 1, which is scheduled for 2018, and Part 2 is scheduled for 2019. So we got but Joss Whedon will not be back for those. So he won't be the writer director of those.
That's 3 years from now. Are we excited for, like, they're separating them a year apart. Yeah, but what if they?
Because they're having all these other ones in between. Yeah, so
I'm sure you'll be fine. I'm sure there'll be enough
to
watch.
You will have your Marvel
fix.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to be.
It's just one of those things that, you know, it's a catch 22. You enter this world and you want to talk about it, and it's just like you're anticipating something for many, many years. Yeah. And you're like, ah, really? Can we wait till 2018 for some of this? No.
Yeah. Well, they have to do those other fights in between. We just talked about Civil War.
They have to develop technology to film with more drones.
That's right.
Let me ask you
this. That's the process of these things now.
This might be like...
The Vision's got to grow up a little. He's new. He's a newborn.
This might be the sound of death for... You know, I don't want to go there because it means I'm basically like defunking
so
Marvel
let's go
movies.
There.
But, do we want... Like, we get news, pretty much hourly in this whole universe. Like, is that too much?
Sometimes it is a little much, I think.
For those who are fanboys or into the realms and stuff, no, it's not enough. It's not never enough. They want more and more and more and more. That's why they have to keep feeding the beast. But I'm not one of those. So I like, okay, a movie a year, maybe two. I'm fine with that. I'm good.
It's getting a little much.
Yeah.
Well. Here's the thing. It's getting a little much for me because I can't escape those fanboys unlike you. So they're always talking. I'm like, want to not care, but now I care. And now it's like, okay, when does this thing come out?
All right.
So that's it.
All right, so you're anxious to see the next one. You just wish it would come next year.
No, I'm excited for the summer. I think there's a lot to look forward to. Okay. So
you can't wait for the next one?
I think that I'm fine. Yeah. I will be excited when it comes out. But until then, I just know that there's so many other things to see. It's a little overwhelming sometimes.
All right. Well, that be your last thought, or do you have anything else you want to add?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, let everyone know where they can find you.
Find me here.
There you go.
On Popcorn Talk, or on Box Office Breakdown, or on AfterBuzz TV.
May movie month coming soon.
That's not happening.
It's already here.
I know. But
by the way, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Elizabeth Olsen. I couldn't even tell it was them. I knew it was them, but I couldn't tell it was them.
I didn't know it was Elizabeth.
And I thought they did a great job with Godzilla. And now they've transferred that over to here. So kudos.
And tell them about Popcorn Talk, where they can find everybody.
Popcorn Talk is a network here on the Popcorn Talk Network where we talk movies. We have a whole slew of
that
shows.
That didn't sound rehearsed at
all. No, not at all.
I don't know. I pulled it out. Yeah. We have everything. Whether you want to dissect movies with us here on Anatomy Movie, I mean, at the Movie Press, we have Marvel movie news. Don't like Marvel? I don't know why. We have DC movie news.
We got them both.
We got Box Office Breakdown. Want to know the numbers of how Avengers is going to do this second weekend? Tune in Monday with Sarah Stratton because she's going to explain all of it. We love documentaries, hate all this.
Yeah.
We got a documentary show.
We got
show.
It.
Want to dress like the Avengers? We have a cosplay show. So much.
Do you have enough shows?
No. We
it's
we
like
have
the Marvel Universe.
With Malone and Mance.
They're
that's
awesome.
That's, if you want to be a film, in the best of ways, if you want to be a film snoon, that's a show for you.
Yeah, yep.
Love Guilty Movies and want to finally...
Guilty Movie Pleasures.
Well, I'm going there with that. Want to admit your Guilty Movie Pleasure? We have a Guilty Movie Pleasure show hosted by Josh, the Wild Man McCouga.
There you go.
I'm certainly probably missing one or two that they're going to be...
They're going
to
feel so
left
out.
Go to Popcorn Talk Network and you'll find it all.
Just blame it on us because we keep cutting you off.
That's right. We even have an adult show.
Hey, the music is playing us out. We got to go.
No, where can they find you?
We got a 10-minute fight sequence.
No, that's it. We're out of it. Thanks very much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.